Will there be a point where you are supportive of Joe Biden as president?
Unlikely.
Will you?
Unlikely with how much. Like,
so you. So there's never like even if he is like all this comes down, he's the president. You won't support him as a president.
If I felt like this was not a stolen election, if they were able to do an audit and to actually like provide, you know, the reassurance that this was a free, like, you know, a free election, then I would accept Biden as the president.
Hey there. Welcome to the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts podcast, where you are encouraged to express your natural thoughts and views through casual, meaningful conversations that hopefully can lead to learning and understanding new perspectives. To find out more info, visit www.gfothoughts.com. Now, here are your hosts, Michael Wong and Robert Din. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back to Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts podcast, everyone. I'm Robert Din, one of your co-hosts. Today we bring back Tara. We welcome her back, our homegrown conservative political pundit. And as always, we have our other co-host, Michael Wong.
Welcome back, Tara. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good. Can't complain about the weather.
Yeah.
I went out eating last night, and it's very much, you know, eating in the freezing cold because, like, I'm here in New York City and we just had the blizzard.
Yeah, yeah, that beautiful view back there.
The view is snow, yeah. That view is nice though.
Yeah.
indoor dining is banned by Cuomo, so we all have to freeze our tushes off
outside.
Go out to eat.
Outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't put up heaters and stuff?
They have heaters, but you know, it doesn't help so much when you're in the like 20s or 30s and the wind chills.
Uh-oh.
So last night I went to enjoy my I went to a pretty nice restaurant. I was having caviar, and I'm like, oh, I was afraid I was going to be dropping the caviar all over the place. Because my hands are too numb to like tiny little cute little portions.
That's like a $5 caviar every piece that you drop down to the floor, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Just about. Thanks, Cuomo.
So how long are you in New York for?
For a couple of days through the weekend. Nice. I'm in and out of New York City as well as like Washington and DC. And so it's were having some protests that were here a couple of days ago because on Monday is when they started the no more indoor dining. So a lot of my friends work in the restaurant industry. So mm-hmm. I was trying to stop by their bar. They're like, actually, we've been closed all weekend. We just found out that we're not opening for the rest of the year.
Wow, I really
for the rest of the year. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with the weather being what it is here, it's not exactly the
most holidays
pleasant.
Coming up too. Think about it. The holidays.
Exactly. Yeah. It's you know, like this gem of a city is, in my opinion, I love New York. I've lived here for about 8 years. It's turning into quite the shit.
it's sad to see that, to be honest with you, but I mean, hopefully, you know, things can shift around sometime next year, you know. But
if people can handle the wind chill and the cold, like, definitely go out and support the local businesses, support their local restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in support of, like, in Staten Island, they had protests that were going on at one like pub and bar to defy the curfew order. So I stand with them with doing that. I stand with California for going against the curfew orders as well. Is, I don't know, at this point in the pandemic, it's like, you know, businesses, like, it's anti-American to be shutting down the businesses and lockdowns that we're doing.
Well, the curfew for me is a little bit extreme, but I understand why they want to do the indoor dining thing, but the curfew is like limiting hours.
I don't even know what the curfew does. Like, who's going out that late anyways? Like, what's the point of even having some random curfew? I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old and I'm just always indoors and like I don't go out late anymore. But yeah, like we're like clubs definitely are not open, right? So like what are you doing late at night? So why do we need a curfew? Like there's not going to be that many people outside anyways.
Yeah.
Even if
yeah.
you didn't have a curfew.
All right.
Coronavirus only, you know, it doesn't come out at certain hours of the day.
Yeah, only at night.
It only shows up if you're standing up. Not when you're sitting down. So, you know, this is a very smart virus.
Yeah. Targeted. It's very targeted.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, what are you drinking, Tara, today? Are you sober?
I was gonna have a beer, but I went with a water filled Starbucks cup instead.
Nice. Hey,
talk about Starbucks cup.
It's a Christmas. Yeah, it's a Starbucks Christmas
cup.
Wow,
you guys are all into that. I don't think I've been to Starbucks in like years. I'm drinking wine. Like I got my rosé as usual. So
I'm gonna go eat at Raoul's tonight, and so that's a nice French restaurant. So I'm gonna save my boozing up for there.
Okay, nice.
Drink water from a flask right now, though.
that's a very unique flask, very flat, like a tiny. How thin is the flask? How thin is it?
It's quite small. It's quite small, but it's convenient for putting it into like a backpack or anything.
Oh, nice.
Oh yeah, I see you have the water in the flask.
Yeah.
Straight up vodka.
It's
water.
Actually vodka. I am Polish, so you know, and no Zdrowia.
All right, so Tara, what have you been up to? I think last time we spoke was back in what, June, July?
It was in October.
Yeah,
right?
I think it was October.
Early October.
It was right before the election. Yes. It was right before the election.
Election day was pretty crazy in DC, and then now that we have just a lot of protests that have been erupting in DC, so I've been, you know, capturing on the ground footage and running around with some of the movers and the shakers of the Stop the Steal movement. So since then I've been not only in DC, but I went to Georgia for the Stop the Steal rallies. I went to Arizona there too, and then multiple protests in DC. And then even just here in New York City, like, I don't know, I just somehow, like, my spirit tends to gravitate towards protests. I'm just going out to dinner, a casual dinner one evening with one of my friends in the car, a protest comes right in front of the car, and I just look at him and I'm like, bye, and I jump out of the car. I looked at him, he looked at me, he's like, oh no, here we go again. and I just like ran out of the car, I'm like, bye.
So, Tara, let me ask you, just during election day, tell us a little bit more about that, being there. Just want, you know, get a from your view of perspective.
Well, election day was pretty interesting because, like, BLM Plaza, which is in front of the White House, that's the area that's like covered with the signs. And so with that, I was around BLM Plaza. They that was the day I also took down some of the signs and headed towards Harry's. Harry's is like the safety area for conservatives and Trump supporters. Okay. And so I had a little bit of a crowd starting to follow me. So I'm like, all right, I got to get to my safe zone, which is Harry's. And then, I was watching the results come in from there. Everybody's celebrating because we're like excited. We're like I believe in my heart that Trump had won. And so seeing how, so it was a very lively party. But you know, like once you went to sleep, the results changed. Every time we went to sleep. So what I learned as conservatives and as Trump supporters, we shouldn't have gone to sleep because results changed in the middle of the night. Like 1 a.m. to 3 a.m., like the results would change. So that was very suspicious.
In the beginning, I remember that election night. I remember it was pretty close, like towards around 6 p.m. And then, but a lot of states still didn't count. I know certain states doesn't count the mail-in ballots until later. And certain states counts the mail-in ballot earlier. But I knew some of the states wouldn't finish counting that night because they already announced that ahead of time. They're like, hey, we're not going to finish counting that night.
With the number of mail-in ballots, it was impossible to count all of those starting midnight on November 4th, right? Like it was impossible.
To me, it felt like a 2016 election night again. Like you had to wait and all the things like that again. I was like, oh great, you know, here we go again, that type of deal. So it was definitely an interesting encounter. But so you were down there, right? You were so you went home and the next morning. How did you react to that? I'm just wondering, like.
You know, like some of my friends had a sixth sense that something was going to happen overnight. I wasn't surprised because I knew a lot of mail-in ballots were going to be coming through. But the part that was like pretty suspicious to me was like the amount that the number had jumped. So because like as they're counting in the mail-in ballots and everything, like to have such a huge jump in specific hours of the night when, you know, you're hearing stuff like, oh, a pipe's burst, so we have to stop counting. So like those type of like testimonies or accounts.
About the Georgia burst, I think that happened that morning of election though. That morning of the election, one of the offices, one of the pipe bursts, I remember that. Mm-hmm. And actually, they stopped that for 4 hours, I remember that.
Yeah. So in the middle of the night, they had said that a pipe had burst. It was probably around, like they announced for the media, for the watchers, everybody to go home around like 11 o'clock.
No, but that happened that morning. That happened that morning before the election.
The morning before the election.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, then I'm thinking of the other incident when they like had people at the arena stop counting. But there's there's all these different all these different accounts and stories that start to flood in. That like at that point the people were asking me like, oh, do you have any evidence? I mean, right now I have common sense, but you know, just you wait and stay tuned to see what kind of evidence is going to be pouring through. And then so that's when I started I went to Georgia. And I went to Arizona to watch the testimonies in person. I was outside of the Hyatt listening to watching the testimonies were cheering, or like 10-hour testimonies at the same time, like listening to people in the crowds and the speeches. And what's interesting is like just being there, you're all like I met people who were part of like the poll watchers
They're actually
seeing stuff happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like you talked to some of those folks.
Yeah. So like just hearing all the different accounts, it's like highly like suspicious to it. And then it's when I went home and watched through all of the testimonies. Like I had to I had my punching bag out while I was watching it, because like I would just get so angry to know that this kind of stuff is happening in the U.S. and to have that feeling of like election tampering. And so the news was reporting saying like, oh, Georgia has audited. I'm like, no, wait a second. They were doing a recount. A recount is very different than an audit. But then the news media is reporting that like, oh, Georgia has finished its audit. We were demanding for an audit to be had. And so they're reporting that an audit has occurred, and the average like layman person is not going to distinguish the difference between a recount and an audit. Mm-hmm. An audit, like I'm a former auditor, an audit actually requires a review process, signature verification, like the validity if the person's like dead or alive, those basic steps, but it's a review to ensure.
I feel like the media that thing didn't help the cause of, because they may have used terminology, to be honest with you. And I feel like, you know what maybe makes me angry? How every state has different standards, like, you know, of counting votes. Like, come on, guys, it's a federal vote. Everybody should be aligned to the same exact standard.
Also, how hard is it to count votes, right? Like, how much different can you really do in a, one, two, three? Yeah. Like, everybody counts, right? Like, how much different can you count versus someone else?
Well, the thing is that also too is like every single what I look into this. So every state has different requirements on how the poll watcher have to be, you know, because you need both parties to be the Democrat Party poll watchers and the Republican side of things. They had to stand 6 feet, you know, distance. Some of them couldn't even allow them to go in there. Some of them had to watch over the video. Mm-hmm. But like the standard should have been the same across board, because this is a national election, not a state election. I understand that if it was a state election, that's a different story.
Yeah, but there's also the whole like we want our states to have authority over what's going on, right? So then they have the rights to do their elections the way that they want, the way that their state wants to, right? So
I think we definitely identify the opportunities for improving,
of course,
because yeah.
Like seeing how many, you know, the holes that are do exist in the process. And it's unfortunate because like what one state does impact the other states. Mm-hmm. And that's why you had, you know, like when Texas filed its lawsuits and the other states joined in, because like, you know, the activities of one state is going to have an impact to the federal, you know, the federal outcome of the election. So there is an impact from one state to the other. And that's part of like the merit that they were trying to prove that the Supreme Court like had, you know, tossed out without even hearing, like to not even give it grounds to hear the cases is something that was also very upsetting.
So what happened with the result of the Texas lawsuit? Did the Supreme Court throw it out? What happened exactly?
They refused to hear it. They refused to hear the case. My understanding is that that it didn't have grounds because the activities of one state doesn't impact another state. And that to me sounds like kind of ridiculous. You know, I'm not a legalese person, but I'm like, I can see that, like, the activities of one state, how it's going to be crossing its electoral votes and making its, you know, decision is going to impact the other, because ultimately we're all voting for you know, the same two candidates.
How does Texas, I'm trying to understand, how does the Supreme Court in Texas, I guess, because didn't Texas win red?
Yes. So Texas was suing. Yeah. Texas was suing the other states like Georgia and Wisconsin and Michigan. And so for their the activities that how they were conducting their elections and their process.
Gotcha.
So that's Texas, and Texas was suing them. And then you have like 20 odd other states who also were red, and actually some Democratic states joined in on the suit as well. And so they joined in support of Texas and saying that the activities of Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, all these other states, Pennsylvania, are going to be impacting us, because ultimately we're going to be under the same presidency. So yes, there is an impact.
So the Supreme Court, that's my opinion. So the Supreme Court declined to look at that. Okay, gotcha. But at that point, what did the Supreme Court exactly say, though? Like, is it because they don't have enough evidence to go with this motion, or is that more like they just? I'm just wondering. I'm curious to see what happened.
They're making a decision not first in reviewing what is going, like what evidence is being presented, because they just need to know if there is grounds. So that the decision wasn't based on if there's evidence, because the evidence is what's going to come about during the trial. The first thing that they need to establish is grounds. And so the grounds that they were suing for is the impact of one state versus the other. So they said that this isn't grounds for the suit, and they dismissed it without hearing the evidence.
Mm.
Interesting. Okay.
So I don't know.
That might be a legal issue, right? Yeah, like no precedents and all this stuff.
This is above our pay grade, by the way.
Right, this is definitely above all of our legal pay grades. Like, we don't know anything of this stuff, but yeah. So that's probably there's probably a lot more that goes into it with all the legal stuff. Like, legal stuff is always so complicated.
They make it purposely complicated, though, to be honest with you.
True.
Yeah.
So Tara, let me ask you this, though. So obviously, you know, you've been busy even before the election, you know, like, so you know, some of those videos that we've been watching on YouTube, you just hit the ground and I'm running, right? And
yeah, I kind of fell into this just by, because I came up to DC just to support as part of the walkaway movement to do the march there. But in my heart, I've always, you know, been very, if there's something I care about, I'm one of those guns blazing type of people. And that's the environment that I found myself to be in as soon as I was in DC.
But let me ask you this, though. I saw, you know, some of those video confrontation, do you feel like one of those, I guess, let me ask, like, and you're trying to voice your opinion, and obviously people are just rude about it, right? And also at the same time, though, that I feel like the other side sometimes try to get the best out of your emotion yourself. Do you feel compassion against those people in a sense, though? I'm just wondering.
I feel compassionate towards them, because like the confrontations I had, like I can see through, like they're all dressed in black, block clad and be hiding their faces, but there is a human that's underneath, and usually I can tell that they're quite young. And then even when you try to engage them into a debate or a discussion, the type of arguments are used, you can tell it's the person's probably, you know, less informed, less educated. Like some basics, for example, with like anti-fascism, like you can ask them, like, what is the definition of fascism, and instead they just retort like, oh, aren't you anti-fascist, or like they don't have an answer to something as basic as what is fascism. And then even when I joined in to observe one of the BLM protests I came across here in, when I was here in New York a couple of weeks ago, that's the one when I jumped out of the car and started following them, because like I was on my way just to dinner with my friend. And I started asking them, they were saying, you know, say his name, Vincent Truitt. And I asked the people there, I was like, who's Vincent Truitt? I'm, you know, please educate me. I'm not aware of the story. And they're looking at me, and they say, I don't know who Vincent Truitt is. I'm like, well, why are you saying to shout his name? Like, why would you be protesting saying, say his name if you can't even tell me who is this guy?
What happened to him? Who's the stand for?
Yeah. So they would just say like, oh, I'm just here marching for BLM.
Right.
And then so, and I asked,
but they're following
people,
the movement of the group itself, but not without knowing that purpose, I guess, or what are trying to what message you're trying to get across.
Yeah. So it's just in like these basic ground level conversations I have with people, like they're not very well informed as to why they're there. So
I feel like that's both sides, though. To be honest, I feel like
I think when you have a group of people, like there's always going to be those people who just don't know what's going on, and they're there. They even do like there's like the talk shows, they always have like a man on the street or something, and they ask people like very simple questions, and people, I feel like they probably just show the worst of all the clips or whatever, but there's always people that are like, I don't know where the US is on the map, right? Like that, like stupid stuff like that.
Barely informed.
Like the Trinity United States upside down. What country is this?
Yeah, I saw that one. There was one, they flipped the country of the United States upside down the map, and they're like, what country is this? And they're like, oh, I don't know, North Korea?
No, it's crazy though.
Like, you know, to answer your question, it's true. Like you always have to be reminded that they are people, and that they are young, they're uninformed. Maybe if they had the same, that's the thing. We all have different exposures to information. And so we're all making decisions based on different information, but then we're coming into a battleground of it.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had the same exposure to information out there, maybe we would have been in alignment. So it's often when you're even getting into a debate with a person that they don't have the same information as you do, and maybe that they would have had the same value and same heart towards it. So I try to keep that in mind when I'm engaging with people and everything. So I don't, for me, like people do often attack me.
It's hard though, let me tell you. Like I feel like keep that in mind at the same time you're having that conversation or that kind of argument. It's hard to keep your own emotion check sometimes, and it really is, because at the end of the day you're reacting still, right? But unless you have the discipline and mindset to do kind of the reaction of that, I just think it's very tough. I mean, especially like you have to be mature enough. How about that? You have to be mature.
Yeah, for me, I have passion for the cause of it. So I am very unemotional when it comes to the people. I'm not judging them as being like hateful or evil or anything, because I don't know them. I don't know their story. They don't know me. They don't know my story. They don't know like my family came from communism, and that's where, you know, my dad's a Soviet refugee. So that's a lot of where my passion drives for seeing what's happening in this country to trying to, you know, stop it in whatever way. I might have a small voice, but I'm still going to exercise it to the way I can, because hopefully that in a sense catches fire and helps others to also see what's going on. Because I feel like the people who are most passionate about speaking out against communism, it's when their families have had the experience of living abroad and going through it themselves and then immigrating to the States and being able to recognize that. And so like that was my father's experience, but it's still my family experience, so it transcends within me.
So let me ask
that's
you
how this, my family experience was too, like running away from communism. That's why they are also very supportive of Trump and the conservative parties as well.
Me growing up in South America, Venezuela, so like my parents ran away from communism as well, and then twice, not just once, twice. And so it's a little bit different for their perspective. They're more of like, okay, I just want to know this doesn't repeat again in America. But not only that though, but also have to come and see the bigger picture as well, because they rather not have a image of being a dictator versus actual, you know, the whole part, you know, the whole government change, right? So it was interesting because my mom was split with my dad, but then eventually they came to senses, like, you know what, they got to see the bigger picture. And so like for them, they end up supporting the Democrats, I think, because they wanted to see the longer term in a sense. So it was interesting to see, because they actually self-argued at that. Like you see the thought process. like I was like, okay, it's interesting. And keep in mind, both of my parents are not educated, you know, pretty much grew like in a restaurant household, you know, ran businesses. They were entrepreneurs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but for them to kind of come to like, okay, this conclusion, it was interesting to see that. But I guess for that older generation, I mean,
yeah,
that's definitely interesting to see that. But anyway, so going back to your all the different events you've gone through, all the different protests you went through, right? Like, what have you learned? I'm just wondering, like, what are the three things do you think you learned from all those, you know, actions that you know, capture, people you talk to?
Well, the number one thing that I've for sure learned is what we see in mainstream media isn't the reality of the manner. So like why I've been trying to capture as much like footage and put that out there on my YouTube channel with the Polish American Brotherhood is because like you won't see the ground level conversations. You won't see, you know, beyond what the headline's going to read. And a headline is so easily manipulated. And the way it's, you know, it's the mainstream media has its narrative. And so they're going to stick with that narrative. And like in my experience now with going against the narrative by showing depictions that are against the narrative, like having, you know, having my stuff censored. And that to me is extremely worrisome because I have I have a small platform. I just hit over 2,000 subscribers, but to see like on my Instagram, on my Facebook, like I've been on Facebook jail now for 60 days. So I'm still carrying out my—
Wait, hang on.
You're in Facebook jail?
Hang on. Let's talk about that a little bit for a second. Wait, what is Facebook jail for those people who don't know what it is? Let's explain that process. I know what it is.
Yeah. Facebook jail is it's censorship. So basically, if you say something that violates community standards, then you're going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to live stream. You're not going to be able to post. Like your stuff is shadow banned.
Did somebody like report you, or what was that exactly happened? Did you know?
I wasn't notified that anybody had reported me. But okay. So in covering the Grand Fridge stuff, I'm covering a lot of the Proud Boys, and the thing is, I'm capturing a lot of positive imagery of Proud Boys, and I'm able to discuss with leadership and find out what they're really actually about and how that they're like and what they're actually trying to promote. And from the mainstream media sense, they're trying to like, you know, if you Google them, they're said to be like this white supremacist group, and they're not. They're not. The leader Enrique Terrio, he's a you know, his family fled communism. He's very vocal against communism, and he's Afro-Cuban. And he's run for Congress. Like, he's not a white supremacist. The group is not a white supremacist. And so, but that's the imagery that MSM is trying to promote about them. Mm-hmm. So like, I just put up even a photo of Proud Boys that sent me to Facebook jail for 60 days. And I was live streaming the protests. And so, that put me in.
How did they inform you that you were in Facebook jail?
So they do give you like Facebook at least gives a little bit more of a detail versus YouTube just says you violated community standards and you get a strike. Facebook will identify the post for you and then it will say that it violates community standards. So it will give you a specific like post for it. And then you're able to contest it. I've contested it, but it doesn't like go through. And there was nothing actual like violent in what I'm presenting. And then I also got another strike when I connected the live stream of the Georgia hearing. So of one of the testimonies of the women. So I got a strike for airing the testimony. Like this, the testimony in the hearings, their affidavit.
Are you serious? The hearing?
Yeah.
The hearing, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a strike for that.
That's then, weird.
Yeah, and so I'm like, if something that, you know, like I'm getting a strike for showing the live hearing of it, and then a couple of my other friends, they've gotten strikes for any discussion of voter fraud or contesting of Biden's win. That is also grounds for.
Wait, did you appeal it? Did you appeal any of those stuff?
I appealed it, but it held through. Everything that I posted about the Proud Boys held through.
Okay. Mm. Interesting. Wow.
That's
definitely weird though.
Yeah.
So did you ever post a video that you talking to Brandon for during the one of the conversations back in November?
I have some stuff posted with talking with Brandon, but that stuff didn't get any strikes on YouTube.
I'm talking about Facebook and Instagram. Did you get any strike for that?
Actually, I didn't post anything with Brandon on my Facebook or Instagram, so I did not receive any strikes with that. But for everybody who's tuning in, please subscribe to his backup channel. Like, they took him off. He had 167,000 subscribers, so that's the point with Brandon. They canceled his channel. Like,
they canceled his channel. I remember that. You told me about it before. Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I can't believe it. Like, just like a post of a hearing is enough to
get flagged.
I also saw another thing.
Was that your second one or is that the first time?
I've gotten like three or four. So that's still crazy though.
So you might be on a list or something.
Yeah, she's in the blackout list.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it happened so fast because all those strikes came in the same day, like literally like days apart. In which case, you know, if I suddenly disappear off of Facebook and everything, so I've been sent off the Facebook gulags. And my account's on like warning to be terminated. So on Facebook, I mean, it is what it is there. And so I've started.
Is this your personal account?
This is my personal account.
I feel like it might be somebody reported it.
Yeah, me too. I got
if it all came on the same day, it seems somebody had flagged it, and then they just started.
I'm definitely being targeted now. Like after this weekend's events and everything, like Antifa, like at the Antifa Twitters have been posting like my image. Right? They're like, oh, where does this girl work? And I sassed them back and I sent them my YouTube channel. And then somebody's like, oh, you're making $5. I go, still $5 richer than you.
So let me ask you this though. Did you end up making a backup account or no?
I'm gonna start making a backup account for everything, because like that you just gotta like I said, my Polish American Brotherhood now has like 2,000 subscribers and everything, but like the amount of work and time it takes to be uploading everything, mm-hmm. and then also
the effort, it's a lot.
So
and know that you're risking your lives, to be honest with you, because you're out there running into the action though. That's just
every video I watch of you, I'm like, oh my god, like this girl's trying to get killed. Like that's what's happening.
And that's the sad part though, like what in a sense, like it's justified to some people to actually cause me physical harm for what, pulling down a sign. It's their First Amendment rights to be putting up the sign. It's my First Amendment rights to be taking them down, and also a form of protest. Like I view Antifa and I view BLM, these are domestic terrorist organizations.
So let me ask you this, can we get into that piece? So you mentioned that a couple of times already, like You Antifa and stand up. So why BLM? Just wondering. Can you give a little bit more example why?
Oh, because BLM is also, they're all part of the, in a sense, like the same arm. I do feel like BLM, like it's a beautiful statement. So the, like it's a perfectly crafted statement, because it doesn't allow, you know, much room for a distinction between the organization and the words. Because the words itself, Black Lives Matter, is very true. It's a beautiful phrase. And but to have it like you can label an organization Asian Lives Matter, and that to me is not going to like make any difference as to what the organization is called.
The organization was founded one thing, right? In the beginning, right? It was founded, you know, but then do you think that evolved, that's changed? The purpose of the organization?
I don't feel like the purpose of the organization in a sense has changed. It's how it was presented is different than what it actually is. Because like when it first came into the scene with George Floyd's death this summer, like I went to the website right away to look at like what is their mission statement, what do they stand for, and I'm not for like defunding the police. Like I think you need to increase funds in order to improve something. I think you need to increase standards. You need increased training in order to effectuate change. And then and places that have like higher levels of violence and everything that they need to be more policed to protect innocent people. So when police are being told to stand down or, you know, not be there, I think that's gonna make worse problems. Like I see it here in New York City. I see it like in Portland. I see it in all these other places that like now that I'm actually going to and witnessing in firsthand. Mm-hmm. So in the organization statement itself, like the organizers are self-proclaimed Marxists. Marxism with introduction of like communism, and then.
Are you talking about one of the founders? I know you're talking about, because I think there was one of the founders that kind of believed that back in the day. She even published something about that. I remember, But you're talking about one of the founders, but overall though, the organization, I don't think in a sense that that's what it stands for though. I mean, in terms of, I guess the way that the movement, I think when this came about back in 2012, right? You mentioned this before, I think it was 2013, 2012, forgot. But I know you're talking about one of the founders kind of believed in Marxism, and she even published something about that. But overall, but as an organization itself, I don't think they stand behind that though, at least the way they portray stuff, information, because and this is, I mean, at least from what I've, you know, the way they view things, is supposed to be decentralized network of activists, right? That kind of like work together for the same purpose or cause, trying to deliver this one social justice message. And I think it's obviously grown over time in a sense. I mean, but you mentioned that you consider them as a domestic terrorist group in a sense.
Because if they're engaging in burning our cities, in looting, and harming other people, like those are acts of terror. If you're using suppression, like, or if you're using actions of force and violence to be suppressing those of opposite opinions or that, like, violence for use of oppression and terror, that's by definition.
But terrorism, that doesn't seem like what they're preaching, right? Like they're not saying that those that like I've never talked to anybody who's pro Black Lives Matter who is also pro the looting and the correct violence. Yeah,
I haven't encountered that in LA, especially in LA either, though, to be honest.
Yeah, so like there's like I feel like associating them is kind of like associating like the KKK to the conservative movement, right? Like I feel like they're also on the same sides, but they also do crazy bad things, but then they're not really related, right? Like they like nobody's saying that those guys are like they're not pro like proponents of that group.
That's
right?
Why the statement of Black Lives Matter is going to be taking on the meaning to it's going to be different according to like who you talk to and everything. So but what I'm speaking to specifically like with the organization and then also the actions, like because like if they're to say that because the amount of sheer damage that has been caused, like it's billions. So these are not the actions of one-off individuals that you had an oops moment. Like this is a collective action of a lot of people.
But I know you're talking about because I was there for the riot in LA, right? Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I remember Billy, like, you know, even my roommate went downstairs, she's like following and everything, stuff like that. But I feel like that because I know the protests happened on one side of the area and then the riot happened in the other side. And I felt like it was two different separate group of people. It literally, it felt like, and it looked like it was two different group of people, because I remember seeing, what's called, even my roommate said that, hey, all these people who were protesting ran over to the riot to stop that. So it was like, I feel like all the protests, a different movement though. Yeah.
All the protests aren't going to be violent. Like the one I witnessed here in New York was not violent. It was people coming, marching down the street towards Washington Square Park. And so there was nothing violent. I disagreed with the words that they were saying, but at the same time, I don't need to agree with it, with the words that they're saying to agree with the fact of protesting, because I am definitely all for about protesting. It's important to protest to keep the government in check.
Right.
Because the government is made up of, they get their power from the people. So it's important for the people to be always protesting. So I might not agree with the words that are being said, like in this particular like protest I witnessed from BLM, but at the same time, like I support their right to be in the streets protesting, and I didn't see anything like they weren't damaging things, they weren't being aggressive to people, like I didn't witness anything of that from this particular BLM protest.
Right.
But the on the other side is like I have witnessed is also like when you see like the writing this and that, it's too much, and now it's all clouded together. And like that's why I always have to distinguish, like there's a distinction for me between the statement Black Lives Matter and the organization of Black Lives Matter, but like it's
right. But I still don't think the organization is like proposing this as like, oh, our people need to go out and riot and do all this stuff. I don't think they're proponents of the riots either. Everybody lives in these communities, right? Like nobody wants these riots to happen except for these small groups of like horrible people who just want to take advantage of the situation.
Definitely like Antifa.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. I mean, we can't assume that. The reason why I'm saying that, because I can't assume every Trump supporter is a racist, right? That's just wrong.
Yeah.
Being like, I personally, especially for that kind of takeaway, like I think overall the movement, at least the organization is trying to represent, I feel like someone's trying to damage that to a certain degree, but also at the same time, you do kind of have to follow the money sometimes, you know, in a sense. So it has to be careful. I mean, but overall, as a group, I think as their organization, I don't think they're trying to portray that kind of. They're not trying to promote violence. They're not trying to promote that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And where does the line draw where like the statement overcomes the original like background of it, right? Like so, say so. Where does like this movement of Black Lives Matter is like a positive. Movement that's going on that we need to be aware of what's going on in our society, right? But maybe you don't agree with the organization that's originated from it, but like at what point is that movement so big that it overcomes what the background of it is? Something like just take an example, like the swastika was used in Buddhist times, like to represent peace and all that stuff. But then later on, the movement of Nazism and all that stuff, like overtook it, right? So like now that's what it means. Like where does that line draw? So we need to, I think we need to see
it's
if
association.
Yeah, we need to see if at this point, this movement has overtaken the underlying like how it started.
Yeah, well, it's a fine line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I believe, like, you know, they're like the initial intent, which caught a lot of good spirited people. I feel like it hoodwinked them into now what we're seeing with the damage to have caused. And so when you have like that, the amount of sheer damage that has been caused, this is not a couple of people going astray. Like,
yeah, maybe they need a rebrand. In general.
So Tara, let me ask you this though. So now that I know you've been posting a lot about the hearings, the recounts and stuff of that. Now that most of the states come out, what are you thinking? What your next moves are? Like, just wondering. I know that they officially announced it, right? That Biden is the next president. I think all the hearings came out, right? All the hearings are done.
Well, there's still going to be another, like the January 6th is going to be the next like step. So things aren't necessarily like over. Okay. You had the electoral vote that occurred on the 14th.
14th, yeah.
And yeah, on the 14th. But January 6th is the next like big date in the constitution like process that we're going to go through. When they voted, the electoral college voted, yep. It's like sealed. It's sealed, and they're going to be like, I don't know. Reviewing that I have to still do my research to that, but January 16th is going to be the next date. I know there's going to be another Stop the Steal rally going to be in.
When is the inauguration though?
January 20th.
Okay, so it's 4 days before the inauguration. Okay.
Yep, 14 days, yeah, 2 weeks before inauguration. So you have the 6th.
Isn't it weird how long it takes to go from like electoral college votes to we know what the results of the electoral college are?
Well, I think that's a good thing because you want innocence, justice, and to be slow to ensure that there isn't mistakes. That like the founders, like when they put this process into place, like they definitely knew what they were doing. This is unprecedented for a first time that we're experiencing this as a country. But I agree with it being a slow process so we could take our time.
Well, I feel like this whole voting process could be evolved to our time.
The founding fathers didn't know how technology would grow, right? Like how technology would become, where like, and they didn't understand that like, oh, now like in 2020 all of the people are like so involved in Instagram and Instagramification and all this stuff that like they want to know right away what everything's happening, right?
Wait, they just want the results right away.
Yeah, we want everything like drop of the hat right now.
Yeah. So let me. So what's Tara? What's next for you? Now that obviously I'm sure there's going to be some other protests going on, things like that. But like, do you have any plans coming up next?
Yeah. So January is going to be a busy month to be in DC quite often, okay. For the continued Stop the Steal and also inauguration. But another in finding myself the last like couple of weeks and finding where my passions really lie is one with the finding domestic terrorism and raising awareness for that. The next is also censorship, because like as I've been trying to raise awareness to have my own voice stifled on social media platforms, that is definitely a big cause for concern, because I consider myself like to be I'm definitely a small fish. I'm like why would it why would you even bother trying to shut me up? Like, and the thing is, even amongst my own like friends who are experiencing the censorship now, I'm like, why is this happening after elections? Like, supposedly, like after elections, if it's after elections, like, aren't we the losers? Why are you targeting the losers? Like, so to me, that's very suspicious as well.
So let me ask you this: I guess one of the things I do notice, though, they do like now, especially nowadays, social media platform, they do quote unquote like fact check stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, I feel like. I feel like when they do this, I don't know who's doing those fact checks, to be honest with you. I don't know how that works. Okay. I feel like they're definitely, there's sometimes they're wrong. And sometimes they miss stuff too as well. Right. It goes both ways. And I feel like in terms of not just election purposes, I think for facts in general, I feel like that's a big misstep in a sense that, because it does, I feel like that's kind of drives away from the platform, from their own platform.
Well, the difference now with the social media platforms acting as publishers. They're no longer a forum where everybody can come and speak like as a free space, but they're acting as publishers to what can be published and what cannot be. And so that is an infringement for First Amendment rights, because people try to say like, oh, if it's not, if you're not being locked up, then it's not First Amendment. But the spirit is there. Like if you're, the dangers that will. happen in society, it's keeping people from having this discourse, because you have to have people of different opinions coming together and speaking. You don't want to have echo chambers. You don't want, you know, a succession of everybody who's a conservative ideology leaving Facebook and jumping over to Parler, and then you have these echo chambers. So I think that's going to be a disservice to us, because we need to collectively have a space that where we come together. But also, like, the when we're in a sense, like, it is similar to like giving the power to the government to decide what is considered, like, you know, hate, or what is considered, you know, what can and cannot be published out there. Like tech giants, big tech has all this power to be doing that. So when they have that power of saying, oh, it's misinformation, then like, what's wrong with like an opinion? It's as if people cannot think for themselves, and so that's another disservice that we're experiencing.
The thing is that people need to understand that opinions are opinions; they're not necessarily facts, though, right? I think the average person, I guess they don't. It's not common sense, maybe, perhaps, I don't know. But also, I get the companies are trying to be careful. Hey, not this opinion doesn't necessarily be fact, but most people take it. Sometimes they take it instead of this, and then they repost and reshare it. Mm-hmm.
And I think people, when something validates what they're thinking, they're more likely to believe that it's fact than opinion. So then it might be that Facebook needs to identify opinions versus doing some sort of fact check, because their fact checks are not normally very good. Every time you go to a source, it's never the right source. But like going, like you'd have to always do more research afterwards. Every time something is written.
Guys, I have to plug my laptop in, so I'm gonna move locations. Give me 2 seconds.
It's fine. We're gonna take a break, though.
All right, time to take a break.
Okay. 2 very boring minutes later.
I'm lagging badly.
You're lagging badly. You want to reset?
Much later.
I'll be right back.
Much later.
It's the Robert Show. Oh, 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 oh. Woo, 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 woo. It's the Robert Show. What?
Much, much, much later.
All right, welcome back. After some technical difficulties and everything, we're gonna jump right into our extra MSG segment. So who's gonna start? Mike, you wanna start?
I'll start here. I'll share my link with you about this little football game going on here.
Keep this in mind, little this is, football game.
Yes, it's little kids playing football. So
okay,
you can watch this. I just shared that over. So pretty much for those who are not watching the YouTube, is I guess this was like a middle school, maybe high school game, and this big guy who just caught the ball towards the end zone, but then he's getting tackled by the opposite team, but then he literally carries the defender across the finish line to score.
Oh my God. So you know, oh my God, he really carried him.
Yes.
Oh my God.
He picked him up from carrying the guy.
Wait, how old are these kids?
They're high school, maybe. Maybe high school. I don't
Man,
know.
This kid is, he's strong. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny as hell. You know, like when you're growing up and you're like watching all of these like, football players and basketball players, like I'm picturing it in my head and like playing through how I would, like, if I was like the main character in the movie or whatever, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna play football and then I'm gonna drag everyone wherever I go. Which never really happened, because I'm not like built for that. Yeah. But like, yeah, that's he's but basically that living out tackle. My fantasy.
Yeah, so that kid missed the tackle, and
did he miss it? He's on the guy.
Ah, that's true.
He's on the guy, stuck on there.
Yeah. How about you, Tara? You have something funny to share with us today?
Oh, I'm going to send you to some memes that have been getting me through my day.
Oh, I'm excited for this. Some meme.
Yeah, I just sent it to the group.
Oh my God!
New York City dining. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that was like basically me last night and probably me again tonight, and you know, but I love NYC dining, so and I feel like
that is crazy.
Go out there and support for our restaurants.
For people who are watching or who are listening, it's basically three guys in the snow at like a table, and like they're basically covered in snow everywhere, and it's just
they're outdoor eating.
Outdoor. Like, I think they have Chick-fil-A. Is that
Chick-fil-A? Chick-fil-A? That looks like Chick-fil-A to me too. And it has a caption that says NYC dining, pretty much dining outdoor in the snow. That is so good. Nice.
For me, I have this video. For people who are watching, this guy is he is spraying people's feet before they go into the house, and he has this funny song that he sings. I'm gonna play it for you guys.
Let's see. Put the outside to the crib. this is the Get Low song. This is the Get Low song from Lil Jon.
Yeah.
It's the theme of it.
It's just so funny. Why are they walking in the house with their shoes on? That's the question. Why do they need Asians to spray it?
They're not Asians.
You know? I was about to say, like,
that's the
Asian
biggest
hassle. Take your shoes off.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem there, is that they should just take off their shoes before they go in the house.
But it is kind of funny though how you mismade up the song.
I know,
it flowed really well. So
it did. He really made that up. I wonder if he makes it up on the spot, or if he plays it every time, if he sings every time he.
Oh, he rehearsed it. That. He definitely rehearsed that for sure.
I don't know. Some people are good. Some people can do it.
Oh, so just improv the hell out of it?
Yeah, some people are that good.
That sure. Oh, yeah. That's pretty funny, though. That's pretty good. I think that made my day there, right there.
All right. Let's get back into it. Where were we at?
Tara was going to tell us what she's going to do next.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
So as elections are, you know, unfolding as they are, yep. The next big passion I have is for media censorship and taking on like big tech. I don't know what that's going to look like. I know that I have some friends who are also involved in the movement for that. So they're planning on protesting over at Silicon Valley. So I'm going to fly out to the West Coast.
Think that it's going to be that active though out there? Do you think?
With big tech, that's where it's going to be at in terms of like protesting in person.
Gotcha.
And like, you know, raising awareness online. Hopefully they don't shut you down from raising that awareness, but
that's true. Like, should we let her or not?
Yeah, this is censorship. She's misinformation. Click violation against community standards.
It's
right
so
there.
Crazy how much power they have in a sense. Mm-hmm. I guess, but you, I guess you are using their platform in a mm-hmm. way. So I guess,
yeah, it's still in a sense like a private company. But when you have like these huge conglomerates that do hold like monopolies of social media with like Facebook and Twitter, and then we have to start like using other platforms to. But it is, you know, in a sense, I'm spending so much time to like have one message that I would tweet out, then reposting it on all these multiple platforms. But I'm finding out about other services, like instead of YouTube, using DLive. DLive
is true. Yeah, there are other services as well. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Just the audience isn't as there. Like the adoption is not there for these other companies.
You can get on TikTok, to be honest, now too, probably. So
I'm shadow banned on TikTok.
Wait, what? Already?
Yeah, that was fast, right?
Wow.
I had one video that went semi-viral, almost at like 500,000 views, and then so I noticed after that video, it was the one from November 4th, me taking down the signs at BLM Plaza and answering okay. questions for the doxers, because they're like, they're asking like, oh, you said all lives matter, like, well, I'm like, well, all lives do matter, Black lives matter, Asian lives matter, so like, you don't need to say anything in front of it, it's lives matter. But so that video went semi-viral on TikTok, and then I noticed after that, like the next video was still like kind of okay, but afterwards, like you can go into the analytics section of TikTok, and you can see where your audience is coming from. So if your content's not being suggested to new users or to new people,
that means you're shadow banned.
And then you're shadow banned. So I quickly got shadow banned.
Someone reported it.
I don't know if anybody reported it, because like it's not anything that's considered violent, unless you consider taking down signs an act of violence. Well, so
I don't think people always report just for violence, right? So yeah. People report just because they don't agree a lot of the time.
Or they're offensive. Yeah. I guess they're offensive, or maybe it's, you know, pornography.
So it'd be offensive. That's
so in terms of how I feel about, you know,
being offensive.
Yeah. That shirt. Yeah, we were talking about that before we started the show. I was like, yeah, but that shirt, like, it just says a lot. <That's funny. laughs> It's hilarious. Well, I was like, I love that shirt.
What I've kind of in the last, like, before I used to be very formal in my language and presentation and how do I speak to people. And overall, like, ironically, I do consider myself a very formal person, yep. But I try to actually get myself even out of that formality, because like now in the way I'm viewing being PC, it's not doing anybody a service by saying, you know, you're basically covering up something in flowery language that you're then, you know, smoothing across the message that you're trying to get across through, or you know, you're to indoctrinate people into ideology, you use poetry, you use poetics and beauty of a language, but really the underlying meaning may not be so good. And the thing is, like, if the person's trying to frame something in a way that, you know, maybe they are actually being racist in what they're communicating, but then saying it in a PC manner, I'm like, then it becomes acceptable just because of the poetics that's being used.
Well, I think there's a time and place for everything, right? I mean, there's a time and place for everything, to be formal and not to be formal. I feel like, I don't know, so this year alone, I'm learning a lot more about communication and the effectiveness of it. And there's a time and place for certain tones. There's a time and place for a certain type of language. It's okay to be formal. I just feel like for certain scenarios, you may not need to be. But depends. So it truly comes down to who you are as a person and what you want to show, right? So for a certain situation, you may want to show not the formal side of you. You know, like, you know, the actual whatever emotion you're feeling, perhaps. Or
it's also harder to connect when you're so formal, right? Like, correct. So you don't really connect to people when you're formal. You're very distant to. Yeah. To whoever you're speaking to.
Well, it's not relatable. It cannot be relatable sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then so, also, I feel like, but there's so much amount of like conditioning to the language and the choice of words that we're using, yeah, that we become so sensitized that to the use of certain words, like when, as opposed to like the meaning that they're trying to convey. And so that's why I'm like, if people it's conditioning to be things that are offensive. So like if something that I'm doing like is now considered offensive, like the dictionary definition on online changes every single day as to what's considered offensive or not, and yeah, based on like what agenda they're trying to push. For example, with Justice Amy, when she used the phrase sexual preference, and then there was that whole uproar about her using sexual preference when every other politician has been using the phrase sexual preference till then, and then overnight the online Webster dictionary then relabeled it saying offensive next to sexual preference when it's a phrase that has been
hang on
the dictionary has like words that are offensive, it says,
yes,
that
it's being labeled, things are being labeled now, and this is a difference from when it wasn't that bit before. If you go onto Google and you type in sexual preference, there's going to be underneath, it's going to say offensive. And then if you choose, like, if you type in like certain derogatory words,
the sexual preference part of it is more like, I think it's an old terminology, right? I think they did put something about being offensive in a sense.
But that update occurred right after Justice Amy had said it. And like even in magazines that were geared towards for the gay communities were even using the words using that phrase up to 3 weeks prior to that. So it's only when, in a sense, a person who is controversial on the right side uses it overnight, Webster Dictionary relabeled that phrase online as offensive. And so I feel like that's something that's happening in today's age.
I don't see that right now. So like I just Googled it. I don't see
that right now.
Let me see if they changed it. Yeah. I saw it. I should have screenshotted it.
You should have definitely screenshotted that. That would definitely for sure. You
can I don't see that anywhere.
But let me ask you this. Didn't she have a hearing with the Senate, right? And mm-hmm. I think this is what happened, right? She pretty much, you know, denounced the term sexual offense to the LGBTQ community. Isn't that what happened? I'm trying to remember the whole story.
You see it?
I was looking at sexual orientation. Sexual preference, it says, the term sexual preference is used to refer to sexual orientation, is widely considered offensive in its implied suggestion that a person can choose who they are sexually or romantically attracted to.
The definition got rewritten as soon as she said it.
Yeah, it's offensive. That's Why is it?
And so, but that's a new thing that words in our language are being now being defined as offensive or not offensive, as opposed to leaving it up to us to see if, you know, we define as something offensive. Like there's, you know, in I'm Polish, there are terms that are considered derogatory to other people and not, but if it's used within the lingo, it's the way it's used, the intention behind it, whether or not it's going to be actually offensive.
This is the Supreme Court, what's called nominee, right?
She was going through her hearing. And so just in when they were asking her questions about, you know, like her views on homosexuality, I believe, and then she used the phrase sexual preference, and then it was a huge uproar from that was the takeaway. I'm like, of everything she had said, that was the takeaway.
Yeah, I feel like they nitpicked that a little bit. They nitpicked that for sure. I didn't hear the whole hearing piece, but I think that I remember seeing articles of that, but I didn't know what the whole story behind it was that in the beginning. But they definitely nitpicked that.
I'm trying to think. So like sexual orientation seems like a scale, right? So it doesn't seem like binary. At all. I feel like there's a scale to sexual orientation. So like a preference could be that like you prefer a woman over a man or vice versa, even though you're attracted to both, right? Like
in choosing terms that are PC and it's not PC, even like when we were growing up as kids, like it was a misnomer before teacher's like, oh, everybody's, you know, crisscross, like Indian style, and now we've updated our language using the word Indian Native style. American as opposed to like, oh, like, you know, like
yeah,
but, Indian giver, you know, or something,
Indian giver, or you know, like those were phrases that were back then, but updated to whatever colloquialisms now. It's not intended to be like hurtful. It was a misnomer, but it was not intentions not to be hurtful, but we're so conditioned to those words to be triggered by them, and people get so angry. They get so angry over these words. I'm like, you know what? We're at the point that my rights are going to be infringed on because how sensitive you are to the words.
Let me ask you this then. I know the Washington Redskins got renamed now to a football team. Mm-hmm. Did you think that rename was like they're just trying to be more PC just because they want to be more inclusive, but in a sense, or because they weren't getting paid for the name? To the tribes. I mean, like, because like Redskin, in a sense, like supposed to be back in the day, was it supposed to be offensive, something like that, or as related to some kind of
to have a discussion with you know people who are part of that tribe to ask them if they find it's offensive for them or not, because like maybe they care, maybe they don't. To your point, if they're not being compensated because of is it something that is a copyrighted word?
Yeah, and so they obviously changed your name just because, and now. So now what's next? You know,
actually offended that they just changed their name to Washington Football Club or something. I'm more offended that they don't have like something associated with them and they're just a Washington Football Club. I'd rather them be something, a hawk or a bird or like, I don't know, like a lion. I don't know. Add something.
I think they're called the Red Hawk now. Right. Washington Red Hawks.
Are they the Red Hawks? No, they are the Washington Football Team. That's what they're called. Yeah.
Hang on. Yes. Are we gonna say like, oh, saying Red Hawk is offensive, or you know, like anything can be labeled as offensive?
They actually came up with that name. Are you serious?
They're just the Washington Football Team. They're not anything. What mascot are you gonna put on?
Yeah, what mascot are you? You know.
Remember when we were at Seminole High School for we were the Fighting Seminoles.
Yeah, Seminoles.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
So that's gonna be offensive now. It's not meant with ill intent, and Florida has a lot of Native American tribes.
Yeah, FSU also they need to change their name. Like that, like no more of this.
Oh, this is being offensive.
That's and definitely also, offensive.
Yeah, like I always used to use the okay sign. Like, oh, okay. So evidently this has a new meaning.
That's
now.
That's a Trump
so
sign like, now.
Okay.
What is that? Wait, what does that mean? I don't get it.
It's a
okay,
Trump.
So. It's not a Trump sign. So this traditionally has meant okay. But what I've learned in now using it in today's now, it's associated with white supremacy. And they're like, oh,
really?
Like it's white. Yeah, they've labeled this.
And you know how they labeled it? It's because Trump does this a lot.
Trump does this all the time.
He does this so much. And then now it's associated with white supremacy.
Yeah.
What about the game? Wasn't there a game that used this too?
Like a tradition? Hang on.
Yeah, you're trying to get everyone to look at it. I never played that game, but I know it was a game.
I mean, you look at the emojis on our phone and everything like that. Like, I would always send back to people. I use okay all the time. And then, like, I saw Trump using it all the time. But that was even, remember, I'm a new Trump supporter. So even beforehand, I was always just like, all right,
that
okay.
That is so crazy.
And then also, like, my aunt is deaf. So that's why I also get used to talking with my hands a lot. Because
okay, mom.
Yeah.
Now you got to do a thumbs up.
I have to switch this to a thumbs up because, like, all of a sudden, because that's how, that's the thing with things being rewritten to serve an agenda or to serve a narrative. It's because, like, they don't, like, they're taking a sign that Trump uses or that, you know, Proud Boys use and everything, and they're like, oh, we're going to relabel that to mean white supremacy so that we can, you know, mm-hmm. use this as sort of some sort of evidence of you know, this, in a sense, like vice or value.
First thing, I guess, I see what you're trying to say. They're trying to turn something that's traditional or what you mm-hmm. turning it against it as a negative connotation, in a sense, right?
Yeah.
That's also, like, part of what I was saying, where, like, changing symbols or, like, terms into something else, where, like, their original meaning wasn't what, like, everyone's saying. And I don't know where the tipping point is where we just are like, this is the new definition.
Yeah.
But, like, we need to, like, identify it, and we need to, like, cut a lot of them off before they start, because it doesn't like
it's getting ridiculous.
It's getting crazy.
Hey, Robert, next thing, this is gonna mean fuck you.
You know, this used to mean fuck you. Yeah. Was it this or this? Like, one way.
Yeah.
Not this. I thought it was this. I thought.
Maybe this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was.
You know this. The this is Texas A&M.
Yeah.
You don't do that. Don't do this in Italy. The horn. Yes. This is Texas A&M symbol, but you don't do this in Italy.
Let me see. The devil, right?
It literally means, if you do this to an Italian, I fuck your wife.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. So don't do this.
No, it's not.
No joke. The devil horns. This means I fuck your wife.
Wow.
Next time I go to Rome, I'm gonna do that to somebody. You know.
No, you know, it's so weird that, like,
it varies from culture to culture, but we're changing it within our own American culture. Like, if you do this like here, that's fine. It's Texas A&M, but, like, initially, you know, you're aware of that.
It's funny that culturally that they needed a sign that says I fuck your wife.
I know.
Like, that's. I think that's something cultural they need to work on. They need to work on themselves.
I want to hear that story, how that sign came about. I'm really curious now. It's because that's just a mind-blowing thing.
There's a story of, like, there's this a group of students from Texas A&M. They were in the Vatican, and they just had their team win. So they're all, like, parading around doing this. And so they were arrested.
Oh, wow.
I read that in a book. As I was reading about, like, the differences of symbols in culture to culture.
That
and
is
so,
crazy.
Like, even
they
like
didn't know any better. They didn't know any better. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, all right, a thin pinky like this. What do you think this means?
I don't.
Fancy.
Oh, yeah. It could be fancy if you're drinking tea.
Fancy, yeah.
But so some people, like, if you go like this means that they're skinny. In other cultures, this means small penis.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. And I see that in Asian.
This can also mean that you're gay. So it can mean skinny, gay, or small penis.
I see.
Okay.
So it all varies from culture to culture.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, when we have these kind of variations within our own culture and it's being transcribed just to put down, like, you know, like the okay symbol now turning to mean white supremacy because Trump uses it, it's so beyond retarded.
But speaking of
you can't use retarded anymore either. That's
I know. That's what everyone
Tara,
tells me. But
Tara, we're going to try to get you on the train.
I meant it in the French term retardé, you know, to slow, retardé, to a retardé.
All right, so Tara, speaking of Trump, though, let me ask you this, though. Now that, let's say that, you know, going forward, let's say they make the election official, whatever, Biden, you know, is a winner. So do you still support the Trump or the GOP party? I'm just wondering, like, what is your alignment stance, like, even after the election?
Well, because I'm still a registered Democrat.
Okay.
I do believe in certain ideals of the Democratic Party and, like, you know, how it represents voices for people who are marginalized. The issue I have with it is when those marginalized voices are then, in a sense, like, made to be like really shoved in your face, or like if you're against one aspect of something, that may that you're against the entire
can you give me
spectrum.
Example?
So for LGBT issues,
okay.
So, like, I'm in line really with all of them except for like a person who's a biological male playing in female sports.
Okay.
Now, if I'm going to say that, people can say, like, oh, you're against tea issues. I see there's a huge distinction in my head between LGB and then tea, because I don't think they're even related, but that's grouped together according to like the spectrum of issues and debates. Okay. So if I were to say like I'm against biological males playing in female sports, like I feel like the accusation that's going to come against me is, oh, you're against LGBT. Now you're
biologically, though, technically they were male first, and so therefore they're going to have different just DNA in general.
Because you know, like I feel it's unfair for a guy who has like whatever testosterone levels to be playing in a female sport. I mean, like, come on. I'm like, that's not fair. Come on. That's just like common sense now. But
isn't it anti-feminist though? Shouldn't we just have one like record and all that stuff? Everyone just play together. Isn't that how it should be? We should just be like, you know what? Get rid of the male, female, everything, and just everybody play together. Just co-ed.
That there's some gender roles.
I thought we're all equal. That's what I thought.
Feminism has ruined everything. Like seriously, like I like a guy opening a door for me.
But aren't you feminist?
Oh, me, I am not a feminist.
Oh.
Hang on. We have to talk about that in another episode.
This might be another episode. Yes. Not a feminist.
I am not a feminist. I think feminism has ruined everything.
That statement surprised me, to be honest.
Yeah.
But okay. Yeah. But anyway, so going back to you were saying though, like, so you're saying that some of the stuff is still aligned with the Democrat Party, but
yeah, but my beliefs and values are above like party lines, whatever they're going to be labeled as, and then so my views are not fully like, you know, supported on either end of the spectrum. I feel like probably with the shift on how I see the Democratic Party to have gone to be more left than I personally am, to see, you know, like in terms of abortion issues, in terms of LGBT issues, also like I'm for capitalism. I think people should work and advance ourselves that way.
Yep.
So I'm not for you know the fully socialized. So you're saying
that you still, so that means you still have some conservative views with some partially, you know, a little bit on the left side as well. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way to a certain degree, but I feel like going back to what you're saying, that what values align to doesn't matter what they label.
Yeah, so I'm going to be going, you know, like as each candidate comes up, I'm going to be assessing them for who they are, what they believe in, and how that best aligns. Whether you call yourself a Democrat or Republican, I think.
Will there be a point where you are supportive of Joe Biden as president?
Unlikely.
Unlikely
with how much. Like,
so you. So there's never like even if he is like all this comes down, he's the president, you won't support him as a president.
If I felt like this was not a stolen election, if they were able to do an audit and to actually like provide, you know, the reassurance that this was a free, like, you know, a free election, then I would accept Biden as the president. For him to have received in a sense more votes than Obama when he didn't even come out of his basement, I mean, like,
well, I guess I sent you this video, but there's actually a whole documentary, not like a documentary, more like the process how he came about. Because to be honest, when I was looking at the Democrat primaries, I was like, Biden came out of nowhere, but then I realized why though. And the fact that he was just waiting for people to make moves at the end of the day. And as soon as one failed, he's just catching the support for all those people that came in, right? But to your point though, like I feel like in 2016 election, I feel like the same thing what happened with Trump. Everybody thought Trump stole the election as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but let's dial back a little bit. I think you
said something like you can't believe that Biden got more votes than Obama, but we had record number of voters this year. So like just having more voters is going to be somebody who has more votes, right? Like somebody's going to get those votes, right? Like I don't know if comparing it to a static number is something to point to as like a, this is why there's voter fraud.
So when I'm just like looking at, I've attended tons of like rallies and following, like, you know, when I'm watching like live streams and the amount of people that are tuning into the RNC versus like the DNC, the amount of people are tuning into watching Trump speeches versus Biden speeches, it's like you're telling me that when you can't even have certain amount of, you know, like such a marginal number of people following him on Twitter, then and then I have to accept this amount of record people.
That makes sense. It makes sense, but there's
also, he doesn't even have like 4,000 people watching him on a live stream.
Well, it depends on Tara. So I feel like there was a lot of people who settled with Biden that voted for him just to get Trump out, to be honest with you. That's just the case, but not necessarily means fully supporting him in a sense that, hey, I'm going to watch him every single speech, right? And so I think, to be honest with you, I settled in a sense that, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to, you know, I mean, obviously I'm one of the rare ones. I'm just going to try to pick best of the candidate. But mm-hmm. a lot of people, they didn't like either candidates, but then mm-hmm. they dislike more Trump just to get him out, and they voted for Biden. That's what happened, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And going to the point Robert said, that it was a record amount of people actually came out and showed votes, to be honest. It was just proving that fact, though. But what I'm trying to get to is that, do you really, I guess, because you're a big believer in our democracy, right? You're a big believer mm-hmm. yeah. in our government. Like, okay.
Yeah, because in the future, like it, regardless of which candidate, if an election is possible to be stolen, then it can happen to any party, any way. And correct. So like that it has a bigger implication to yeah. me. And so like when I'm seeing that they're not, that the states aren't willing to actually provide like investigations and audits, like if you do an investigation and an audit and it comes out to be this way, then that's something I can accept.
We'll come back to that point in a second about the state and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is that, so let's say, you know, a lot of the state already officially made him as the winner, whatever it is, right? But the thing is that are you saying that you're not going to accept him as your president in a sense because that means you're not supporting our democracy? Is that what you're saying? Or is you're saying that because you feel like this
democracy, I feel that democracy didn't take place. So there is not a way for me to accept. Yeah, a democracy, like a free form election did not take place. So that's why I can't support him. And so, but what does, in a sense, how does that mean? What is that going to play out for the next like couple of, you know, next 4 years of a presidency and everything? So it's, you know, like I would do like,
and is it because of what each state did for the election stuff? So for example, give me an example of one that you think that didn't do a good job, and can you elaborate on that? I'm just wondering.
So following like the Georgia hearings, that was like pretty interesting to have like suitcases appearing in the middle of the night. They have video footage of this type of, you know, evidence of when everybody is sent home, and then for ballots to be coming out from underneath a table, but as opposed to everywhere else. And then they show people like sticking in the ballots multiple times. And so
there's video of this?
Yeah, there's video of it.
Is it cut out of context though? Or is it just like a 10-second, 20-second clip in a sense?
No. It's the security footage.
So I've seen security. So I know Georgia does this. They have live stream security footage for people to watch. But I notice that a lot of people just cut out of footage from certain things. Though, but we don't know what they're doing because you can't hear it. There's no audio behind those footage.
Mm-hmm. But you can see like those ballots are coming out in suitcases underneath after they sent everybody home. And then you can see like with the Dominion software is the same that is used in Venezuela. So they've been proving how like you can switch the vote. Like what is on a ballot versus what actually comes out when it's put in. So like these types of evidence that we're seeing in the hearings are not even being heard.
They would have caught that in the recounting, and they would have caught that in the audit though. That's the thing.
They're not auditing. That's the thing. They didn't do an audit. They did a recount. But if you're counting the same ballot,
they did a hand recount though.
They had a hand recount though. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if the hand recount, so like if you see a ballot that says, you know, it has Biden and nothing else that's checked, like it audit is when you're going to do a verification step on the ballot itself. A
recount. I think the hand recount was part of the audit, isn't it? I could have sworn that was.
For Georgia didn't do an audit. That was part of the protest that we were there, like saying like do an audit, not a recount. And then the media was saying like, oh, they did an audit, and they were misusing the terms of an audit versus a recount. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm holding a ballot that says Biden and I count it, like yes, that's a count. I can count it as many times and it will always say Biden. But to do an audit, it's going to be a signature verification, checking that the person is alive or dead, checking that it's a valid, you know, address, checking like that kind of stuff. And then also being like, is this suspicious that like you have, you know, only one person is voted and not anything else?
I don't know. I know people who will only vote for a president and don't care about what's going on otherwise.
Right. In terms of like the nominally of, you know, if you're going to check like what the percentage is versus like other elections, if, you know, because most people vote down ballot. So it's just looking for those statistic like anomalies to it. Mm-hmm. But they didn't like, so people have been doing like independently this kind of stuff, but it's not being heard. It's not being heard by the, the evidence is coming out in public hearings, but then it's not being heard from a like a legal perspective. Like you have testimonies that are sworn affidavits that are coming through. That's what the public hearings were all about. But that's not being
considered into it. I don't know. A lot of the stuff that I heard, I didn't hear all of this, I don't hear everything, but from what I saw, a lot of the stuff I saw was a lot of hearsay, and I didn't see any actual evidence other than, like I would want to see, like, numbers, and I want to see, like, how many of these happen, and things like, and people, like, send me stuff all the time where they're like, oh, yeah, like, you want to talk about voter fraud, there was 400,000 California votes that were flipped or something, or like they didn't count or something like that. Like 400,000 in California is not a lot. Like, and especially like with the margin that we that Biden won by in California, that's not a lot at all. So the percentages of fraud versus the total population, I would want to see it have a significant
a big difference.
I want it to significantly impact, right? And mm-hmm. if you're saying 400,000 but you're talking about California, that seems like different than if you said 400,000 inside of like Georgia or one of these states that actually had some sort of adjustment.
The numbers are like, you know, like when you say 400,000 or 10,000, like when the margins are that small, mm-hmm. With it, like they have to be, you know, they have to be reviewed. I think we should have processes in place for having audits. I mean, we have that in businesses, like before when I used to do financial audits, like, every year with year end and stuff like that. Why wouldn't we have those type of processes in place now for our elections? And it's not so much voter fraud that I see, it's election fraud. Then the difference between like, you know, if a voter is trying to like, you know, maybe sending in a ballot and also going to vote in person, that would be a form of like voter fraud. But election fraud is something from like related to the Dominion software or to the people who are putting the ballots in, like the manipulation that's occurring from the counting side and not so much from the people. So I don't think there's very much in terms of voter fraud, but actual election fraud.
Okay, so that's why, I did not know the difference there.
I could have sworn that Georgia did audit though, because I think one of the arguments was they were looking for the signature stuff. That's what I think that was the whole issue about signature matching. I think that was the argument the last time I sent you guys the link of this, but I could have sworn Georgia did an audit though. That's why I was saying.
Maybe more on this, but just to circle back to the original question, everything like from what I saw with following through, I watched most of the majority of the like the full hearings, like the Georgia one was like 10 hours, the Arizona one was like 14 hours. So I watched the whole hearings and I was in person at the protests and stuff, and then and just talking at the ground level with people, I don't have that reassurance that this was a free and fair election, and mm-hmm. and the fact that things that I would think like why wouldn't you have these things considered, like let it be heard, let it be investigated, like if, and the thing is like when you have, you know, you have people who you have your Trump supporters who don't feel like it's a free and fair election, and then you have some people who are even questioning it on the Democratic side, like Democrats who are also questioning it, like we all want to have reassurance of a free and fair election. So it's like just do the steps to give us that reassurance, and that's how we're going to actually be healing people. Because like the Biden's calling for unity and everything, you're not going to achieve that unity unless you can give the population reassurance that this is a free and fair election, and then to get them that's something that we'd be able to accept. If you freely and fairly won the election, yes, then I'd accept mm-hmm. you.
Well,
as
think
a,
about
as
this though. So in 2016 election, something similar happened to this scale as well, because they asked for a manual recount. On top of that, I think they had asked in Florida. Actually, one it was one of the states they asked for a manual recount. It took them like 3 weeks to do that. And then mm-hmm. the same thing happened in Nevada and I think Pennsylvania again, because they were surprised how Pennsylvania went red, you know, mm-hmm. like at that year, 2016. And so they demanded, they were saying the same exact thing. They demanded for that recount. They demanded like, what was it that caused Michigan to do the recount again as well? Like it cost them a tons of money to get that officially, you know, because a lot of folks were like, oh, Trump probably stole this election in a way. But I see where you're going with that, because it's not, now the size a little flip, and they're like, hey, you know what? Be more transparent about it. Let's, you know, actually true here, you know, to actually see, you know, showcase the audit in a sense, right? be honest, a lot of stuff, this stuff could have been avoided if done the process right in place. But yeah. This goes back to what Marjorie said in the beginning, right? Like, hey, this is a national election. Why cannot it be standardized across different states, same exact thing that way? And I think the system needs to
I think they can do their separate, but we should have some sort of audit that's across the entire country. So like, we have some sort of auditors who are going around to every state and doing the same process of auditing and identify, and like, so we can have assurance
not that this independent is all audits on. That it's different for every single state.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense.
And that varies per county, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's even in the county level.
I forget about the county level as well. So yeah, I agree. So going back to you, where you're, you know, saying, so for you that you will look at the candidate, not necessarily the party then going forward.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good to evaluate, always evaluate on the person. And I think, you know, if it does come down to it that it's not Trump being inaugurated on January 20th, like, I feel faith that he's going to run again in 4 years. So
I think so? I feel like he's tired, to be honest.
That man has so much energy for anyone. It's unbelievable. And the thing is, he's only going to be 2 years older than Biden is now.
That's true. I'm not talking about the age. I'm just saying.
Like, we already are saying that these guys are too old. Why would we want them to be?
Yeah,
don't we want new fresh blood? As long as his brain's sharp, I'm good.
But Tara, don't you want some new fresh blood that represents you better with higher energy, though? In a sense, like,
you know,
I don't know about high energy. Trump is pretty high energy.
He's high energy. Like, for the days before November 4th, he was doing like 10 rallies in a day across multiple states. I was like, I don't think even at my young age I could have the energy for that. So he's a machine. So I'm not worried about his energy levels. I'm not worried about like his bother me.
So I guess for me, then, in a sense, I want new blood. I just want to see new faces. I see
him as new blood because he's not a politician. He's a businessman, and so
we're gonna see more of that, though. We're gonna see more than not typical.
I like that. I mean, all three of us should be going for it. So
actually, that leads to my next question, though. Have you ever thought about running for local office, though? I'm just curious.
I have. I'm actually a political science major from my undergrad, and I had
so you thought about going, it. That crushed your mind.
Yeah. I had considered going through like the political route, going to law school before, and I went a different route from that, but somehow life's kind of pulling me back into it. So because I do care a lot about community and society, and so with activism and putting voices out there and representing people, and also like with my own family's background coming from with the understanding of communism as we do, I like to be watching out for the trends that I am seeing here. So I always say Stephanie Murphy, and she's my congressional.
That's right.
She's my congresswoman, I'm like, Stephanie Murphy, I'm coming after you.
I think she's on the Democrat side of things, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. I mean, she's done a good job putting herself out there, though, because I remember first time hearing about her. I had no idea who she was and stuff. But I think overall, though, you know, I feel like in order to actually make some kind of change, you have to do it within. You have to. Yeah. Like, that's what I feel like. You can pressure the people to do whatever they want. I just feel like either you're rich or powerful, or you do it within somehow.
Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like there's no incentive to change within.
Well, correct. Once you get there, that level, you're like, why do I want to change?
I'm already. I spent and all of them are like, I spent 60 years to get here. I'm not gonna I'm not gonna let it go now, right? I think I want fresh blood, but I want fresh non-legal blood. Like, I don't want these lawyers to come in here and do all this legalese shit, and then I don't know what's going on. Nobody knows. They're going to draft up a 100-page bill and then say, you have 24 hours to read this and vote on it tomorrow. Yeah. How does anybody do that? I don't know how anyone could even, like, even if you were a great lawyer, there's no way you can read through it all, and they just add in all this stupid shit. Like, if last time we talked about, like, if we were president, what we would do. If I was president, I would make every bill 2 pages. You have to have it all in 2 pages, or else it's not going to get through.
I mean, they have a summary.
Without the flowery.
No, I don't want a summary. I want the entire thing in 2 pages because you. I don't want you adding in all this stupid little shit. Like, I don't care. I just want. I want to know what the details are.
Hey, try to be bipartisan, okay? Both sides.
You can be bipartisan in 2 pages. All right. through it.
That's true. We gotta just keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Like, but to be honest though, I mean, I don't, certain things are just not black and white. It is not. Mm-hmm. Some things are just not black and white. And I think that's the time and place for that. I do think that the government needs to change to be more efficient to a certain degree. I mean, I think we're all asking for that. I mean, you saw that with the stimulus check. They passed that stimulus package. It took them how long to get a check out there through the IRS. And they asked the IRS to do it, which they were not competent to do because they had enough people. They didn't have the technology. They just didn't have the process to do that in the first place. And so it's kind of like, fool, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think, I'm not saying, I'm not blaming any part of that. I just think the infrastructure was just not there in general, right?
Yeah.
So in terms of the voting system, I think definitely needs to get involved. Not only the voting system itself, but also the counting, like you said, just the counting of it, the election night, things like that. I think the electoral vote needs to evolve too, to be honest, if we're talking about changes. But what, going back to what we're saying, why do they want to change? What's the incentive?
What, like, once they're there, they just want to keep the power. So why would they even change?
That's true. Because like, that's why we're not seeing a rise of like, you know, multi-party systems and everything. Like I said, my views are not necessarily represented in either Democrat or Republican, but like for a third party system to truly rise to have any ground and everything, like both parties are going to have to allow for the dispersion of power. Yep. And so, you know, I don't necessarily see that happening. These people want to hold on to the power that they have. But that's why, you know, people who are not your typical politicians should be, you know, just regular people who care.
Yeah.
Who care a lot, like us. Like we're around running podcasts and trying to get, you know, opinions out there and discussions and get people talking and stuff. We care. Mm-hmm. And so for that to be a calling to step up.
Like this is important though. Because
absolutely.
Because ultimately, to be honest with you, like, I didn't know you before even the first episode, right? So, but I knew that you supported Trump. But for me, like, I wasn't even curious what your background story was. I learned a lot from you. Hopefully you learned, you know, from us as well.
Absolutely.
And I feel like having conversations kind of like this is important, just having that, but not being judged and shut down by it, though, the thing.
Yeah. Just once you shut down and you're not open, you have to keep your mind open to ideas. And the thing is, like, when you're open-minded about it, it's like you can listen to stuff that it's not about changing your mind. It's about like learning and seeing things from the other person's eyes. And the thing is, if you're willing to engage in those conversations, you're more secure about where you stand. Because like I feel like people who are not willing to talk about it, it's because maybe they're so frail and fragile in the way they think that they may,
or they don't have their minds gonna be changed enough. Or they don't have to read their own research enough that, okay, this is my true stance, right? Mm-hmm. But also I feel like this, if you're in a little bubble, this may break you out of your bubble. You're like, okay, wow, I could have misinformed, or I could have
So like always being open to new information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we're all human beings, right? So we are, so we grew up in our own frame of bubble in the beginning already because where we are. It's the question is though, are you willing to expand the bubble, or are you willing to get out of the bubble, get out of the comfort zone to actually learn something new or not? But in order to do that, you have to have that awareness and mentality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so, and it's tough. I don't think an average person don't think like that. I mean, Tara, obviously you're not an average person, and it's just, I feel like it's, you know, it's us for, I think it's up to the individuals, for people who are not the average person, to actually spread, you know, that kind of education awareness.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the politician would do that. I don't think any politician mm-hmm. will.
Yeah.
They just, you know.
They don't even want to do it, I don't think. They just keep pushing their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's also why, like, so, like, I mean, running for local government is great, but I feel like once you get there, though, I don't know, it changes people, though. I've seen it for some people, it changes people, just because they got in power, and now they're like, okay.
You know, I think you need to know where, in a sense, like, I think of Dave Chappelle. Remember when he was coming really into the scene, he stepped away really at a height of his career and stuff. He already established where his line was going to be.
Yep.
And so if it ever crosses into that, that's when he knew he was going to exit this. So like that's up for each of us.
So Dave Chappelle's a different story. I actually watched the interview. So I've been following a lot of comedians lately the past, I don't know, six months or so. And Dave Chappelle's story is a little bit interesting. He declined the highest paying contract because he realized he's not doing the show the way he wants to do it.
Yeah.
And
And you knew the difference between at the point in time if people are laughing at him or laughing with him, and like
It's just the message, I guess, they were trying to. He was trying to say, "I'm in charge. This is my mm-hmm. time. This is my, you know." He didn't walk away for a year. He walked away for how long? 8 years.
Till now, I think he's only coming back onto the scene now.
I think he came back 2 years ago.
It's been a few years. He's had a couple specials since he came back.
Yeah, he's amazing. So I'm happy to see that.
Yeah. And he's one of those rare bleeds where he can push the envelope with his jokes.
Yeah.
So, which is good.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I love how good he is of just delivering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right, though. I just wanted to, we wanted to catch up with you in a sense that, because I feel like you're definitely, especially this year, sitting crazy for you. Like, you literally flipped the switch and went all out, you know.
Still alive. I didn't see it coming.
I didn't see that you're still alive.
I didn't see it coming in for my own life, because I was just like living my little Floridian life in quarantine and just watching the news, watching everything happening. But, when I started paying attention, I realized where I care and where my values are the same. It's just the
does your dad call you every day? Like, does your dad call that, hey, are you okay? Are you alive? Send me a text. I'm just curious. Like, I'm sure your family worries about you. Your friends worry.
Yeah, they of course do and everything. So, but they also know, like, this isn't, like, there's no really way of like stopping me.
Well, they're not gonna try to stop
you. Yeah, no one can stop you.
No one can ever stop me. They just check in to make sure I'm alive. So.
Follow my location. He's my location.
Yeah. So my dad, he'll call me and he won't ask me like if I'm okay or anything. He'll call me and talk about like regular stuff. Like he knows if he's talking to me, I'm clearly okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's true. Yeah. I don't know. If I did this and I told this to my parents would just freak out. They're the typical Asian parents where like freak out about everything.
My mom's, my mom's a liberal, so she doesn't even look at anything that I have out there. So she's I don't think
she doesn't really.
I don't think she has any idea about it. Hey mom, shout out if you ever watch this.
Hey mom.
The funny thing is, beforehand, like when I was at home, I was just doing simple videos, like going out to like Disney Springs. I got kicked out of Disney Springs the first time, and then we got kicked out of a couple other places. So my mom would hear, like, my father and I talking about me getting kicked out. My dad's like, whatever with that. And my mom jumped in one time.
Typical Tara stuff.
Yeah, she goes, it's because you're provocative. I was talking about online censorship, and she's like, well, you deserve it. And I'm like, mom, wow. My mom's my biggest critic in terms of, like, all you liberals are out there. Don't worry. My mother is my biggest, like, liberal.
Well, let me ask you this, Tara, though. Are you provocative, though? Do you think you are?
So leading up to that, she hears me that I got censored. She doesn't know what I got censored about. She just tells me I deserve it. Right. And so I'm like, oh, so you're for the censorship of information, mom? And she goes, I know you. You're provocative.
I know you.
You're provocative. And I go, mom, I'm not doing anything that's provocative. I mean, like, what's provocative on my page? And she goes, Ivanka 2024. I post this as Ivanka 24. Right. I'm like, okay, don't you mean hashtag Ivanka 2024, mother? And then I go, what else is provocative? She's like, the picture of the screaming lady, Kimberly Gifford, when she was, because I posted saying that, she's my inner voice. So this is before I'm doing anything. This is before I'm in DC, before anything. And she's just telling me, like, I know you, you're provocative. A mother knows her own child. You're provocative. And so, like, I posted another thing about, like, my mom probably thinks I'm, like, with, like, burning stuff up. Like, what I'm really doing is wearing a shirt that says it's okay to be white and taking pictures of families. So like what my mom thinks I'm doing versus like, and that's like
reality,
hell in the background. And what I'm actually doing, family photos with people. So she's like, you're provocative. Like a mother knows her child. And so in a sense, like when I started kind of going out into the real world, I was like, in a sense, I kind of got permission because she did tell me I was provocative. So I'm like, I'm just being me. I have no idea how to be anybody
mom,
else.
Mom, you said I was provocative. Yeah. I'm just proving you right. I'm just proving you right, mom.
I'm just proving what you're saying.
No, but further though, all joke aside, do you think you are though? I'm just wondering from your own personal perspective.
Honestly, I don't see myself as provocative. I see, okay, like, to me, this is like normal. But I guess everybody has different definitions of normal. I don't think it's voicing your ex.
Different tonish like, levels, I guess you could say. You know?
Yeah, like I'm vocal about my beliefs. But to me, that's not being provocative. I think that everybody should be vocal about their beliefs. Like, I don't believe in like polite dinner conversation not to be about politics or religion, because I think everybody should be contributing to discourse and learning from each other. And there's no need to, in a sense, become heated about it. And like, but when it, when
some people just can't handle it. And I think that's the reason why they say, you know what, we don't want to handle the drama. Some people just cannot handle that. And they don't want to ruin the vibe, I guess. They don't want to ruin the vibe.
They call me provocative because I'm willing to talk about it. And often, like when I'm talking about it, I'm all smiles. I'm like polite about it. I'm like, when the Antifa girl's like, you took our sign down, I'm like, here, do you want it back?
I saw that. You gave it back the sign. She was so mad. Yeah. She's like,
you didn't rip it up. You could have ripped it up though.
Yeah, she's like, oh, thanks.
Did you want this? Here you go.
Like, thanks. I'll take this.
Yeah, it's just like, you're not welcome here. And I go, well, that's the beauty of America. I don't have to be welcomed here because I can stand here if I want. You can stand here if you want. We all can stand here if we want. But, you know, it's when they're trying to, like,
You should offer her a hug.
During COVID? Oh my God. She would die.
hey, Tara doesn't care, you know. She's out there already. She's already out there, you know. No, but to be honest with you, we're glad to, you know, talk to you. You know, seeing you, I'm glad you're healthy. You know, you just keep doing your thing. I guess you know. Again, what you're trying to do, you're trying to find the truth and try to push the envelope. Yeah. In a sense.
I'm a truth seeker, a truth finder. So like, I'm reporting just what I see from my eyes on the ground level and putting that information out there, and people can, you know, decide for themselves. Like, you have, you know, you have your message being shown on MSM, and then you have like, look for the footage that you have from people who are out there on the ground level to really truth find. That's all I'm doing.
But I feel like with that mindset though, just be careful in a sense to be, because sometimes we become our own worst enemy where we trap our own little self, right? Like, in front of us. And I think we're all guilty of that just because of human being. That's all it is. And I think in order to kind of step beyond that is maturity, awareness, in a sense. And I think you kind of have that in a sense. So, just keep posting. I mean, your videos are going viral. Some of this, you have, 4,000 views. I remember last time when we talked, you had maybe 800 subscribers now, and you had over 2,200 now.
Yeah.
You're growing, so, you know.
Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. We're gonna end this with our rant session.
You wanna go first?
Free range rant session. So who wants to start?
Let the guest do it. Carol, you have
anything? Yeah, you want anything? You
want... I think I've been ranting this entire time.
I don't know.
Thanks for listening to my rant, guys.
Hey, this is a free therapy session for you, you know.
Actually, it has been very therapeutic. It has been.
All right, I'll start with mine. How about this? So for me, in a sense that it's okay, it's not more like a rant. It's more like a long term, like just okay, relief in a sense. Okay, so 2020 has been definitely crazy in a sense. I mean, a lot of people just, you know, ups and downs for a lot of people, and it's definitely. And I still feel like, I don't know, for some reason, it's more like this is just the beginning of something. I don't know why. It's kind of in the back of my head. I cannot figure out why. It's annoying the hell out of me. I'm like, would 2021 be either worse or just crazier? I don't know. I can't tell. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but something about it, like, this is just the beginning.
You're thinking we're not done yet.
We're not done yet. Like, yeah. It's kind of weird. I don't know. It's not like a mental rant, but it's just something annoying me in the back of my head. I don't know. But
this is you being Nostradamus and being like, this is we're just the beginning. Lots of stuff is gonna happen in 2021. You think 2021 is gonna be worse than 2020?
I don't know. I just feel like 2021
premonitions.
It's like a great reset that's going on. So
yeah. Well, I feel like 2021 it's gonna be another crazy year. I don't know what's gonna be good or bad, but it's just gonna be another. Or we're becoming more adult and we're becoming more aware of the, you know, current event situation, right? That could be it too. I don't know.
Mm.
So how about you, Robert?
So for me, I'm going to send you guys this because so YouTube Premium decided. So I have like YouTube Music or whatever. Like I'm signed up to
no ads,
all that stuff. Yeah, for no ads and all that stuff. But they... they give you like some data on like the stuff that you're watching and like your hours.
Yeah.
This is so they just switched from YouTube Music to YouTube Premium, or from Google Music to YouTube Premium in July, yep. right? So this is just data from July to now, and it says I've watched 640 hours of ad-free music.
Okay.
And I'm just thinking, like, 640 hours. That's a long time. That's a lot of hours to be on YouTube. YouTube 10-minute videos. That's what it is, right?
Wait, does it count a podcast though? You watch it on a podcast, I forget.
No, I watch it on our gluten-free account, right? Like I watch that on our own personal account. This is my personal account where I watch everything else. 640 hours since it's only half the year. I don't know. I calculated it out. It's like 4 hours a day, which is very in line with what is normal. Like normally, yeah. I get off work, turn on YouTube. I have over 1,000 subscriptions of.
You do watch channels. A lot of other podcasts as well, and you do watch a lot of.
I just watch so much YouTube
reviews. You watch a lot of reviews.
I watch like I have people that I will religiously watch no matter what video they post. Right, so it's. I don't know. It's a lot of hours, but it makes sense that I spend 4 hours a day watching videos. And that's not including like Netflix or Hulu or anything else. That's just YouTube. And I'm like looking at this and I'm like, you know what? Like, this is 4 hours a day. I'm pretty sure when I like before this, I've been watching YouTube since college, right? And there was days where I would watch 8 hours of YouTube a day. And Jesus. just like one after no when Call of Duty was out, when like that was really big, like yeah. Call of Duty videos and Minecraft videos were big, I watched all of that. So like I'm looking at this and I'm like, man, I've spent so much time on YouTube.
So this is nothing for you.
No, but I'm just saying, like, how many like this is just half a year and it's not even like the most I've ever watched YouTube. How many hours in total of YouTube have I watched? And it's I'm scared to even go calculate that number because it seems like a lot.
I think I've learned more from YouTube than I ever did for my like 2 masters and everything. Like,
you think so? You know,
I think so because of the YouTube. In a sense, like I agree. YouTube is more of a thing for me 10 years ago. Like if there's anything I need to do, I just YouTube a tutorial. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's true.
There's so much information that's out there, and then I like it being, you know, from different perspectives. So I think YouTube has been an excellent educational source. So like when you say the hours that you've been spending on YouTube, I doubt they're wasted time, Robert.
I don't know if all of those channels that I follow are educational at all. There's a lot of just like watching Call of Duty and watching Minecraft. That's not educational. It's just entertainment.
I was trying to defend you.
Yeah, but there are a lot of videos. Like if you watch someone like Mark Rober on YouTube, he posts one video a month.
Yep.
And
he's good though.
He is amazing. He just posted out his every December now. He's posted up a glitter video where he makes a glitter bomb because people keep stealing packages. So he made a glitter bomb. So when people open it, it sprays glitter.
Like, it's been like 3-4 years in a row now, right?
3 years in a row. Funny. It sprays fart smell. Like it smells really bad, right? Yeah. And then he has like GPS on it, so he knows we're all in the art. But like, he's an amazing creator. If anybody wants a YouTube channel, because obviously I'm an expert at YouTube creators, right? Like who's the people to watch? Mark Rober is like my favorite guy.
Yeah, he's a bit former engineer at NASA. So
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's definitely a good one to follow through though. But yeah, no, what I was saying, Robert, like in a sense, like I agree with Tara because I've learned a lot. For example, like Excel, Excel is fun channel. I learned a lot from Excel.
Really?
That guy makes Excel entertaining. Let me tell you.
I've never watched this guy.
Excel could be a talent in itself for a pageant competition. It's like, all right, guys, I'm gonna create this quantitative model for you.
I think 640 hours is definitely a little bit under for you for sure. I know you watch under. Like five hour podcasts a day sometimes.
You know? Oh yeah, there's a couple podcasts that are 4 hours at easily, a time. Yeah. Yeah. So I watch those from start to finish. So that's five hours out of the 20 something hours a week. Yeah. It's just that podcast.
All right. Speaking of podcasts, well, Tara, listen, we appreciate you. We got to end this episode. I know it's getting late. It's thank dark you behind you already.
Yeah. It's dark. We started it was light and now it's dark.
Yeah. I'm going to go have outdoor dining in the freezing cold weather to support my restaurants over here.
No, wait, listen, hey, we appreciate having you on. Thanks for your time. You know, keep doing what you're doing in a sense. You know, just keep learning, keep growing. So.
Yeah. What do you want to pimp?
Yeah. Your YouTube channel below?
Oh, yes. Please, everybody, be sure to check out my YouTube. It's Polish American Brotherhood on YouTube. And then also all my social media handles are POAM, POAM Brotherhood. That's exactly how it sounds. But check me out on YouTube and please feel free to reach out with any questions or any other content that you'd like me to discuss. Happy to always answer to anybody.
All right. Sounds great.
Well, for those who are watching us on your YouTube channel, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe to us. And for those who are listening to us, subscribe to our podcast. And leave some comments. We'd like to hear, you know, what people like to say. You know, if you want to come on the show, come on. We'd like to talk to you about anything.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And go on to our website, gfothoughts.com, and watch any other episodes that we have.
Yep. Appreciate it, everybody. Thanks, Sarah, again for coming in.
All right.
Bye.
Until next time. See ya.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gluten-Free Organic Thoughts Podcast. As always, we appreciate you. If you are watching us on YouTube, please don't forget to subscribe to our channel, like this episode, and leave us a comment. If you are listening to us, please leave us your honest review on your preferred podcast listening platform. And as always, you can find us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GFOT Thoughts. Drop a comment and give us some feedback. We would love to hear from you. Until next time, see you then.